But do you see BlackRock and all these guys being the next potential quote unquote bad actors here in this coming cycle?
Whether it's the irrelevant ETFs, whether it's Trump's announcements, whether it's other governments at some point coming out and saying, yeah, we want a strategic reserve too. Whatever it is, the fiat system destroyed my life. I woke up one day and my entire life savings were completely stolen by the banks in Lebanon. I woke up literally with $70 to my name. No government likes Bitcoin, no matter what they publicly state. They all hate it for the simple fact.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Tony, the brains behind Bitcoin Way. But Tony, I heard an old podcast interview with you where you predicted the potential of a seven-figure Bitcoin, but that was pre-Trump election and pre a bunch of things that we've had coming on, you know, the potential of Bitcoin strategic reserves, all of that. So Tony, are you as bullish as you were 6, 7, 8 months ago, or are you even more bullish now that you're seeing all the things transpire?
I am exponentially more bullish, man. That seven-digit figure I predicted pre-Trump is like a speed bump now. You can forget that. We're blasting way past this. If even 25% of things that, you know, are in store materialize, things are going to be absolutely crazy this year. 2025 is going to be the year where I believe anyone who's not in Bitcoin and is not sitting on, you know, tens of potentially hundreds of millions of dollars will not be able to access that cheat code of, you know, walking in and buying Bitcoin like, you know, we've been doing for the past 16 years. That will be finished. So the only way you're going to benefit from Bitcoin is by earning it at that point, by providing, you know, a valuable service to the world. And someone paying you in sats versus dollars, euros, or whatever your local currency is. That's what I predict.
Yeah. And that sounds like a great, great prediction here for at least the Bitcoin hodlers. But then how does that all play out? Do you think that, you know, because we see nation states want to come in, and nation states, they're not going to be traders, right? I mean, you know, the Lummis bill lined out the U.S. buying 1 million Bitcoin, 200,000 a year over 5 years and holding it for 20. Because of those different factors where nation states are not going to be just like kind of pumping and dumping it, do you see it just, you know, essentially the volatility not really being there as far as like the downside risk, where everybody's now going to try to front run the nation states because of this scheduled buying and just the massive amounts of FOMO that we're seeing on the sidelines?
You're one of the few people that actually thinks that way. And I completely agree with you, because for the simple reasons that why would they sell it? You know, I mean, sell it for what? If they needed the fiat, they could just print it. So why would they give up, you know, the only scarce and valuable asset, you know, the world has ever known for it? So it wouldn't make any sense. And considering all these nation states now are essentially going to be like, you know, fighting each other for the remaining supply, I don't believe we see anywhere near the volatility that, you know, some people are still expecting. Those 70-80% drops, forget it. Those will be long gone once nation states and the big institutions vacuum clean the remaining supply. You may see like occasional, you know, like little glitches, you know, in the price at some points, because, you know, for whatever reason, but those big, big, massive drops, those will be a thing of the past. You'll read about them in history books at some point.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting now that we're seeing China essentially, I don't know if you saw this report come out the other day, but China has allegedly going to sell off all of their Bitcoin that they've gotten that seized. And that's nearly 200,000 Bitcoin, you know, for a massive amount of profit. Now, it might just be smoke and mirrors. I'm not 100% sure that this has actually gone through. It has been rumored that it has. But, you know, how do you think that these nation states are going to start to view it? Do you think it's almost going to be an arms race or a battle? Maybe in a sense, like similar to the Cold War, where, you know, China does not necessarily like the United States. So they hear the United States potentially building a Bitcoin strategic reserve. So maybe they'll try to manipulate that price in one way or the other, or at least make some attempts to do that. Now, do you see that as a potential arms race of sorts? Or do you think that it's just, you know, some Bitcoin hopium, some that we're going to be in a nation states battle here?
Well, the thing is, no government likes Bitcoin, no matter what they publicly state. They all hate it for the simple fact that it was created to make them irrelevant. To, you know, the separation of money and state, that is the underlying premise behind Bitcoin. You know, whether some people admit it or not, that is the case. It is peer-to-peer electronic cash, meaning no one can control it, no one can stop it, no one can regulate it, no one can get in the way. They can just essentially either choose to use it and benefit from everything that it offers, or try and get in the way and get destroyed, you know, in the process. Why some of these countries still insist on selling Bitcoin? Like, you know, previously we had last year at Germany, who did that, you know, monumentally stupid move and now regrets it. And now, you know, China is also doing that. At least last I heard, they also sold a large portion of it, but at some point stopped because I think they heard Trump say something. So they put the brakes on that. Why they would sell this is beyond comprehension to me. Either they assume if they get rid of it or they put out enough misinformation, they might scare people away from it because they genuinely believe the general population is, you know, ignorant or too dumb to understand anything. And that's how they'll maintain control over them. But that's not working anymore. You know, like, I mean, we've tried this. We've seen the news trying to be censored, you know, very heavily in the last few months, last few years. And that's also failed spectacularly given enough time. And so the Bitcoin genie is out and you're not going to put it back in. So, and as more people understand this, and now you've got big players like in the United States, you have President Trump, whether he understands it fully or not is besides the point. He is pro making America great again. And if that means including Bitcoin in that cocktail, so be it. So at some point, he will end up understanding it. I don't believe it's the case now. He may have an idea around it that's going to help somehow strengthen the dollar, you know, and he's going to use it, you know, to help America get out of debt. I don't know how he sees that happening because, you know, Bitcoin wasn't created to extend the lifeline of any fiat currency. It was designed to completely replace it. But everybody needs to come to that conclusion, you know, at their own pace. So I'm very bullish on this because I don't really care what they do or what they understand. The result is the same. The more Bitcoin is adopted, the stronger it gets. And the adoption is growing with or without nation states. I see this just based on our little involvement in the world between 2 years ago and now. The amount of interest and curiosity and intelligent questions from retail is exponentially higher than it was when I first got into Bitcoin. And for me, this is like beyond confirmation that this is going to places we have never seen before. And at some point, governments are going to have to catch up to us, not the other way around. But, you know, despite all of this, we're just like 1% of the global population that's involved in Bitcoin. Just wait till 2%. And then 3%, and then it's going to exponentially leap, you know, into double digits extremely fast. That's when that suddenly becomes like explosive. That's what I'm waiting for. And I just, my sixth sense just tells me it's imminent because of all the buzz that is happening. Whether it's the irrelevant ETFs, whether it's Trump's announcements, whether it's other governments at some point coming out and saying, yeah, we want a strategic reserve too. Whatever it is, there's no such thing as bad advertising when it comes to Bitcoin. It's always in the spotlight. And so at some point, that spotlight will resonate somehow in more brains, and people are going to start asking questions and seeing that, hey, these guys that are holding this thing called Bitcoin, the grass on their side is crazy green, and my life sucks. I don't want to suck anymore, right? I want what they have. And so they're going to start taking the moves in order to go from their shitty positions into that other side of the pasture.
Now, Tony, you said the Bitcoin genie is out of the bottle, right? And you let, or you described a bunch of different things. You said retail's coming in now, being more knowledgeable. There are irrelevant ETFs, you know, the nation state potential adoption. Well, I want to know if you had three wishes for this Bitcoin genie in 2025, what would those three wishes be?
I want more retail to pay attention to this. Bitcoin was created for the people. And right now, unfortunately, the wrong people understand it properly. And, you know, because of that, and it's okay. I mean, Bitcoin is created for anyone, for the good, the bad, and the ugly. But it's just a question of who does the work to understand what this is, to front run everybody else. I want to see more retail involved in this. I want to see the people regain back their time and energy, regain back their lives, control over their lives, their dignity, right? I mean, this is what I want to see. My reason for coming into Bitcoin, I've said it on many podcasts, was because the fiat system destroyed my life. I woke up one day and my entire life savings were completely stolen by the banks in Lebanon. I woke up literally with $70 to my name. Imagine, I haven't been thinking I was fully retired. You wake up the next day with a homeless sign on your forehead. Go figure that one out. This is a movie nobody has seen before, and I pray nobody does, because it's an extremely painful one that nothing in this world can prepare you for. And a lot of people in the West have a hard time wrapping their brains around this, because they're so far from anything looking like this could possibly happen. But after you study money, right, you understand that the mechanics of fiat currencies aren't limited to any one country. They are coming everywhere, US included. Because how are you going to pay off that $36 trillion debt? It has to be paid off somehow, right? So you either keep printing some crazy amounts now in order to just maintain the interest. But yeah, as you keep doing that, you're killing the population's purchasing power. So at some point, that's going to give, because their income is not rising at the same rate as their debasement. And when you hit a certain point of like pain, in my experience, there's one outcome: violence. I've seen it. It's as ugly as ugly gets. I don't want to see it in a country like the US, because one major difference between what you guys have and what we had in Lebanon, we didn't have 500 million privately owned assault weapons that are protected by the Constitution. Okay? But when you kill everybody's purchasing power, the result is the same. So that movie, that horror movie, the best Hollywood producer, I can assure you, will not make a movie that illustrates this as well as I'm hoping I never see. So my wish is that we never get to that insanity. How we're going to do this, time will tell.
I mean, I'm with you. I hope we never see hyperinflation as well. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, we're sitting here and people, as we're recording this today, are talking about Bitcoin crashing to 100K, you know, falling down from the previous all-time high. I mean, if you were to tell us this was the case 6 months ago, we would have probably been laughing and jumping for joy. But all that to say is, like, you know, you've experienced hyperinflation firsthand. Now, the U.S. has not done that. So why don't you describe a little bit about, like, you know, kind of what that experience was like? I mean, I know we all saw viral, or at least I remember seeing viral videos on the internet of people literally robbing banks just to get their own money out. Like, not even like, hey, give me extra money. They're just like, hey, give me the money that it says is in my account and give it to me in cash and give it to me now. And I think that was like kind of, you know, very eye-opening for me, you know, as an American, kind of just seeing that, those videos on the internet. Now describe a little bit about how that was, and dive into a little bit more of that story.
And that's, it's come, if you want a definition of insanity, that would probably, you know, describe it, you know, fairly accurately. Everybody's doing whatever comes to mind instinctively. When you've lost everything, like literally everything, and you're like stripped down to the bare metal of your existence, you have to survive somehow. And so it comes down to, you know, what you're genetically made of. Survival of the fittest in its truest sense. If you don't know how to fight, physically fight and protect yourself, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you can get killed very, very simply. This is what happened. People rob banks with guns, knives, crowbars, whatever it is, like you said, to get their own money, because, you know, they don't care about any somebody else's savings. They've got a sick mother, dying father, whatever it may be, kids to feed. Their money's stuck in a bank. They know who has the key to that vault, they're going after them no matter what it takes. That chaos is crazy. Now, it doesn't get very far because the banks shut down. Nobody could access anything. The bank employees refused to go to work for their own safety, of course. So that was out of the question. So they broke the doors. They cracked the ATMs. Nothing was working. But how do you live? Well, then people had to resort to basic trade, barter. You went back like to prehistoric times where if you had a skill or something you can offer someone in return for something else, that's what you would do. There was no money to transact with. So if I was a barber, I would be giving out free haircuts, to someone who had a farm. He'd give me like some tomatoes for a haircut, that type of thing. And so there were a lot of people doing things they never expected to do or never even wanted to do. So that's where you need to take your ego and you got to make it disappear because, to survive, you have to do whatever it takes, good, bad, and ugly. And a lot of people, there's a lot of people I know that didn't make it out of this because it was just too much. So a lot of folks that I grew up with are no longer here, unfortunately, today because of this. And so you're literally living, minute by minute, hour by hour, just hoping that you just can make it to the end of the day and, rinse and repeat until somehow, somewhere, there's some glimmer of hope that, you can hold on to that will get you out of this nightmare. That's what it looks like. Supermarkets were being, targeted as honeypots. They were the number one honeypot. Like, people know how they need to eat, right? Where are you going to go? Broke into supermarkets. Everything was raided. Restaurants next, by hierarchy of needs. Food and water, number one. So that's what it looked like. And the prices, forget it. The prices were like, if you wanted to buy a chicken breast, you literally needed a suitcase of that garbage local money to carry with you because it was worth nothing. So, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds scary to say the very least. Now, obviously you're not in the United States, but you see the dollar currency kind of being inflated away. And, the government currently in the United States telling us, hey, CPI is at 2.5%. But one of my favorite websites is govflation.com. And if you look at there, it looks at the basket of goods of 1982. That was post gold standard, but they hadn't changed that basket of goods just yet. And if you look at that, inflation's still well over 10%, even though that they're reporting it's at like 2.5 or so now. Now, with all these, metrics and everything like that they're reporting, I know that the people on the ground are definitely feeling inflation still. Now, I don't think that we're in hyperinflation, but do you think that there's a possibility that we get to that point just from, what you've seen as the signs early on when you experienced it and, kind of the signs you're seeing from the United States?
Of course it's possible. It's almost like a mathematical certainty. I mean, where's the money going to come from, right? Like, I mean, you have for people to walk into the stores and not being able to afford anything, you have a problem. So whatever the numbers the government puts out is clearly not true, because if they give you a single digit, you go into a supermarket and it's like double digits, then something is wrong somewhere, right? So it's going to get worse if nothing is done. But the thing is, I don't know what can possibly be done with a system that has reached the end of its lifeline. Like the fiat Ponzi is at its end. It's failing. It's not like it's going to fail. It's already failing. Now it's just a question of how fast it completely gets obliterated. This is where I think they're trying to somehow hold the pieces together with duct tape, trying all sorts of creative ideas to maintain it. But it's unsustainable, in my opinion, anyhow. You have $36 trillion debt, which is growing exponentially every single day. How are you going to pay it off, right? So you have all these fancy ideas, Bitcoin creative reserve, crypto now, there's a regulatory framework for crypto. We're going to make America number one. Somehow all these, you know, creative ideas are going to maybe strengthen the dollar. In my opinion, you have to forget about the dollar. The dollar is done. It's just a question of how do you transition away from the dollar into something that makes more sense economically and on many other levels for the country. But to get a politician to accept the separation of money and state, that is a feat in and of itself. At some point, I think they will realize on their own that they have no choice. Either they concoct something, come up with some, you know, I don't know, like one day they decide, let's, you know, hard fork Bitcoin, come up with our version of it to maintain control of it. If they do that, in my opinion, they will fail spectacularly and that'll be the end. But I don't think they're that dumb, you know, at least I hope not. Because whenever people tell me, yeah, but, you know, BlackRock might hard fork and this guy might hard fork and all these big players might hard, let them do it. You know, if they do it, it's like almost like a Christmas present, because there's enough people out there that understand that the only thing that has value is decentralized money, which is Bitcoin, the one that nobody can control. So if you try to sabotage this because you think you're smarter than everybody else, you're going to zero almost instantly. And you've just made everybody else, you know, twice as wealthy with the amount of Bitcoin they originally had. And you're only going to get one chance to do this, because you're not going to be able to print back that Satoshi. So wild times, man. It's really, it's almost like watching a soap opera unfolding in the monetary world in real time. I'm very optimistic on the United States. I grew up with a lot of American culture. So for me, like, even though I'm not an American, like, there's a lot of me that is American. I have a lot of American friends. American culture is in my blood. I want to see America, you know, be number one, but in the right way, you know, like not in the old ways where, you know, you're behind many sabotages in other places of the world. I want to see America lead by example, not by force. And I'm hoping Bitcoin somehow, you know, like, influences this enough that we see this happen in our lifetime. Because if it does, America will have the lead, but will maintain the lead because everyone, or a lot more people, will willingly want it to lead because of that shining example.
Now, do you think that the strategic reserve and all these other things, so I have two questions for you. One is related to BlackRock and, you know, kind of what you went into there. So actually, I want to start there because I thought that that was very interesting where you said, basically, if they try to hard fork, they're going to fail. Now, last cycle, we had FTX, you know, Celsius, BlockFi, all these others who were basically lending out, going willy-nilly. The SEC allegedly regulates the ETFs a little bit more, but do you see BlackRock and all these guys being the next potential, I guess, you know, quote unquote bad actors here in this coming cycle?
It's possible. I mean, human nature is what it is, right? You know, when you've got that addiction to power, it's very hard to want to let go of it. It's almost like a drug addict, you know, like you just want more and more of that high. But for the first time in history, we really have an option that doesn't allow this. And so anyone that attempts to do it will fail, as has happened in the past. I mean, how many people have tried to fork Bitcoin and have resulted in a big fat zero? There's many attempts to do that. We have, you know, it's just go back a few years and it's all there. So what makes them so different, right? In my opinion, it's because too many people understand decentralization now, understand the history of money. The word of mouth is spreading. You can't stop this news anymore. So even if they control the media, which that in and of itself is also failing, but let's say they did, word of mouth eventually spreads. Back in history, when they tried to destroy a people, a race, and kill the language, all you needed was for one person to remain to speak the language that they would eventually teach it to someone else. And before you knew it, it spread again as if nothing had happened. Same thing will happen here. You can't stop this because, one, you can't control the narrative. We live in the digital world now. There's 100 million ways around any form of censorship, so it's not going to happen. And plus, you have peer-to-peer money that is not controlled by anyone. So once somebody understands this, that he doesn't need your permission to save his money or to pay someone, they're never going to accept money that doesn't do this, right? That's true freedom. We've never lived in a free world, money-wise. We've never lived it, but we never realized that we never lived it because you're born into it. You think it's normal. That's just how things are until either something really bad happens to you, like it did to me, and it, like, you know, bitch slaps you, you know, a 180 to start focusing on answers, real answers, or you completely, like, you run out of money. You completely run out of money and you're like, okay, now I need to do something. Or you give someone that's never had money, you show them how they can have money and regain control over their lives. Essentially, you're teaching them how to fish, how to feed themselves forever. Decentralization, self-custody, ownership of your time and energy. Never possible before Bitcoin, right? So when you're transacting without anybody's permission, you have to be foolish to want to go back to a position where you have to ask permission. Who wants that, right? If I want to send you $1 million right now, it takes me 10 seconds, I'll do it. I don't need to go through my bank. I don't need to ask anybody's permission. You just give me an address or a QR code, beep, done. Once you get used to that and you know that you can do it, who in their right mind would want to go through regulatory headaches belonging to somebody else? You're right, like, who would want to do that?
I agree with you. I don't think anybody really would. And I think but the thing that trips me up a little bit is that, you know, in the West right now, we still look at Bitcoin as like a digital gold, right? We don't look at it as much as the peer-to-peer electronic cash that's in the white paper. Now, I think we're going to get to that point at some point in time. But the things like BlackRock ETF and, you know, strategic reserves would, you know, in a sense, like, kind of validate that, in a sense where, you know, it's just digital gold in the West, where the strategic reserve is helping strengthen the dollar. Now, you know, what you said a little bit earlier was that, you know, there's going to be all these attempts to kind of strengthen that dollar. How do you see us getting to hyper Bitcoinization? Do these products need to fail in order for us to get to a full hyper Bitcoinized world? Or is there going to be some sort of in between where we have, you know, an attempt to back the dollar with Bitcoin, and then, you know, human greed is human greed and it overtakes, and eventually that method of madness just fails? Quick break from this podcast episode to bring you the safest way to buy Bitcoin on the planet. You got to go to the well, folks. That's right, the Bitcoin Well. They will help you buy Bitcoin and send it directly to your personal wallet. You can sell Bitcoin directly from your personal Bitcoin wallet. And on top of that, if you want to buy large amounts of Bitcoin, they've got some of the most competitive rates in the space, where they've got great white glove service. I'll even help introduce you to my friends over at the Bitcoin Well to make sure that they're taking care of you when you want to go through the over-the-counter service. And on top of that, they help support you and the freedom technology that Bitcoin offers. So I wouldn't partner with a company that I don't use myself. So I use Bitcoin Well to make all of my Bitcoin purchases. So I highly recommend them. So why don't you go to thebitcoinwell.com/greencandle and you can sign up today and join the party at the well. Maybe even get some tokens where you could throw into the wishing well and potentially win some free sats as well. Enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
Well, look, that's a very good question. I wish I had a crystal ball to give you an answer to that. I don't. I just think that, you know, given enough time, people will follow, will go to where the grass is greener. And, you know, with enough people leading by example, you'll start seeing a lot more people flock to the right side of history. That's what I believe will happen. When you understand peer-to-peer, right? Again, it comes back to what I said earlier. It's going to be very hard to tell someone that now you can, you know, transact with your own money, earn your money, save your money on your own without needing anyone, to have them let go of this and go back to asking permission. I just don't see how that would happen. And you also have to be very careful about those that push the narrative of Bitcoin being digital gold only, okay? That's not true. Bitcoin as a digital gold on its own, in my opinion, will fail because that's not what it was created for. And I think those that are pushing that narrative are doing it with bad intentions, because if the masses understand that Bitcoin is a medium of exchange, all fiat currencies die within 5 minutes, because Bitcoin is money. Actually, it's the only money that is money. So they don't want, what some people don't want, the majority to conceptualize that you can pay someone with Bitcoin, a medium of exchange. Because if that happens, like I said, all fiat currencies fail. So Bitcoin is three things in one. It's a store of value, the medium of exchange, and a unit of account. Each one of them on their own has exponential value. Imagine the multiplier effect of having all these three things in one asset at the same time. Again, we've never seen it. There's no way to calculate this. There's no comparison chart. We've never had it before. But if you do the math and understand human nature, that, you know, inherently we're born to be free. You know, like, I'm not going to listen to someone telling me how to live my life if I have the option not to do it. And if they're going to keep attempting to do this, at some point there's going to be a conflict, survival of the fittest. Either they destroy me or I destroy them. Human nature never failed. Study history for as far back as you want to go. Whenever you have tyranny, it always ends in war and violence, and the strongest one survives. So the fact that we're here, you know, living, so to speak, as free people, is because, you know, many centuries ago there was millions of people that died to fight for that right for us to live free. But several decades ago, we were lied to, tricked, psyoped, whatever you want to call it, into giving up that freedom under the guise of using money that was supposed to be for our own good, but has turned out to be nothing but a tool created to steal, censor, and control. A Ponzi fiat system, that's all it is. We didn't notice it back then because it was still in its infancy. And, you know, over time, it's like little tidbits of deterioration you don't really notice. Fast forward to where we are now. It's at its end of its expiry, right? The cracks are so big, you'd have to be like blind to miss them at this point. This is why I'm saying there's so much, like for me, there's so much wow in being able to live and to witness this happen in real time. It's like mind-boggling, because in 100 years from now, people born where Bitcoin is going to be like normal, it's not going to mean the same thing to them that it does to us, right? Like, I mean, somebody born today with high-speed internet has no idea when you talk to them about a dial-up modem. They think you're crazy, or they ask you how old you are, right? So you don't want to ask that question. Bitcoin will be the same thing in 100 years, but when they study history and they study our time here, that we are Bitcoin, we are the reason why they are living these glamorous lives, you know, in a world where the separation of money and state has already been done, and that utopian, you know, level of humanity is in place, because, you know, now you're actually forced to produce value into the world, into society. Otherwise, you don't get paid. You can't print this shit out of nowhere anymore. So if you don't provide value, you're not getting anything. So all of these low-level jobs and skills and all that, all of them will be replaced. Humans will be forced to upgrade themselves, because now you've got robots that can do them, right? So if you're too lazy, well, you're out. It's very simple. So all of this pressure, right? Some people might argue, oh, it's a terrible thing. I don't want it. I don't think it's terrible. I think it's great. It'll force you to become a better human, a superhuman, to, you know, upgrade everything about you in order to keep that world moving forward in the right direction, in a way where, you know, the core of it, the money of it, can no longer be corrupted by any living soul. That mold, you know, must be completely broken and never allowed to be put together again. The fact that some human being can decide what other people can do with their time and energy, that must be finished, destroyed completely forever, as far as I'm concerned. Otherwise, we just circle back to the same dystopian shithole we're living in now, in a different variation. This is why Bitcoin must succeed. It is succeeding. It's just perhaps not succeeding as fast as I would like it or other people would like to see it, but it's definitely succeeding. Like I said at the earlier beginning of this conversation, I already see it from conversations I have with folks that I interact with on a daily basis. There's a lot more interest, a lot more intelligent questions around stealth custody. And that's another thing. The Bitcoin revolution is 100% about self-custody. And that's something else that there needs to be way more education in the space about. Bitcoin is great, right? You have a lot of narratives around it that talk about the micro and the macro and the philosophical and moral greatness about Bitcoin. Fantastic. All of that is true. But if you don't own it yourself, then you've done nothing. If you're still relying on a third-party custodian, which a lot of people are, you've done nothing. You think you're in Bitcoin. You're not in Bitcoin. Because any third party, no matter how good intention they are, how great people they are, is still a counterparty risk. You don't need them. It's not an insult not to use them. It's just following proper Bitcoin protocol and ethics. That's what the Bitcoin white paper was created for. Personal responsibility. It doesn't mean that if I do it, I'm insulting someone that's offering a service to do it for me. That's not what it means. It means I'm doing things for my own benefit. And that's what, you know, I think we need to see a lot more of in the world.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think, like, you know, Bitcoin is truly, although you think that it's not being adopted very quickly, and, you know, a lot of people in the Bitcoin space would wish that we would get to, you know, a hyper-Bitcoinized world a little bit quicker. If you look at the adoption curves between Bitcoin and the internet, Bitcoin's actually outpacing the internet right now. So, you know, I know Bitcoiners are, you know, we're in the world of dopamine hits and wanting to get everything very quickly. And I think once you open your eyes to Bitcoin and you see, you know, the corruption that the fiat system has created, you're like, why can't everybody else see this? And why aren't we getting to this, you know, potential utopia a lot quicker? So what do you think it's going to take for that sovereign individual thesis to really play out, where people don't want everybody else to kind of take care of it for them? They really want, you know, that self-sovereignty and, you know, that personal responsibility. What is it going to take? Is it going to take, you know, something like a scenario, you know, hope like you, like, you know, majority of people are going to have to face something like that? Or, you know, you think it's just maybe a gradual progression that we get there?
I think it's going to be a mix of both. I mean, pain is the best teacher. You know, once you get completely destroyed like this, you never want to allow this to happen to you again. And the only way you're going to do this is, you know, by learning new skills that weaponize you in order to prevent this. Some people are still going to choose the path of least resistance. I mean, that's just human nature, you know, and things will be good until they're not good. You know, like when I had my money in a bank, it was also a 5-star bank, highly reputable, and, you know, all that glitz and glamour. Until one day, that same glamorous bank turned out to be the number one thief in the country, along with all the other thieves, which stole everybody's life savings, right? not because necessarily the people inside the bank, the employees, were bad intentioned. The system was created, you know, to do this. It's a system created to steal, and it failed. It's a Ponzi. At some point, it blows up. So personal responsibility is not hard. But there's also, you know, there's a lot of energy being put out there sort of like to market against people's fears and anxiety of technology, because Bitcoin is also tech, right? And most people don't come from the tech world. But what they do understand is that if they make a mistake, poof, the Bitcoin's gone, which is a valid concern. However, there's no reason for poof, the Bitcoin's gone. As long as you follow, you know, proper security protocols, a little bit of discipline, it's always a happy ending. All you need is a good teacher. I mean, if you're the type of person that's savvy enough to do it yourself, there's plenty of amazing, excellent, you know, online resources for free that you can just take the time, sit down and learn. Otherwise, if you want a shortcut, you know, to getting it right the first time, you know, there's other services out there. We're one of them, obviously, that'll handhold you through the entire process. We skip zero steps. It's a very comprehensive and detailed. There's no shortcuts or workarounds. I will train anyone that comes to me to become like me or as close to it as possible. And the people that we work with, none of them come from the tech background. They're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s that have never really used the computer beyond its basic functionality. All of them are doing Bitcoin in full self-custody, like they've been doing it their entire life. All right. So it's not rocket science. This is not climbing Mount Everest. It's just a bunch of new steps that we need to learn. But you need to do them properly. No shortcuts, no workarounds. As far as we're concerned, Bitcoin already is the world reserve currency. That is the mindset that we take on every single call. And that is the mindset that we approach the consults with in order to secure and configure everything that is required to make you the head of security, the head of that bank of yours, which is going to be the most valuable thing you own categorically 100%. And then hopefully you can take that knowledge, you pass it along to your kids, your family, whoever you choose, and they take on that education and they pass that torch on forever. That is the premise of Bitcoin. That's why it was created. Power back to the people. And all it's required is some education and an open mind. Done.
Yeah, and I think that'll come here in a time very soon. And I think more and more people are getting onboarded onto Bitcoin. So, you know, with, you know, the business that you're in and the development of that, you know, where do you see, I mean, you don't need to dox everybody here, but where do you see, I guess, more people starting to resonate, or maybe some surprise? Are you seeing more people start to come in from, you know, places that are experiencing hyperinflation, or are you seeing more, you know, Americans start to come in because they're realizing inflation is bad? Like, where are you seeing it, and how do you approach those different conversations from people around the globe? Do you kind of have to just meet them where they're at, or how do you go about that?
We're global. We see traffic from all over the place, United States included. There's huge traffic from the US and Europe and, you know, like Australia, UK, you know, all over the place. I mean, sometimes we meet folks from places I've never even heard of before. And for us, it's the same thing. You know, like the individual is contacting us because they want to learn how to protect their time and energy. And so we teach them these skills, irrespective of where you come from, irrespective of how much money you have. It doesn't really matter for us. For us, it's about teaching you the principles of holding on to your wealth. If you don't know where to buy Bitcoin, we can recommend places depending on where you're situated. We don't sell any Bitcoin ourselves. We don't touch anybody's Bitcoin. We don't sign any transactions. We're really here, neutral ground, to help you learn how to do this yourself. And so depending on where they come from, there's many services that are available. And you know, we just point you in the right direction once your foundation is in place so that you can start experiencing life, you know, on a Bitcoin standard. And it doesn't take very long for someone who gets into that lifestyle to understand what all the noise is about, right? Because once you get on a Bitcoin standard, life in general becomes noticeably cheaper and given enough time free. Whereas if you're not in Bitcoin and you're still living on a fiat standard, well, unless you're making like a ton of money, your life is turning into a hellish nightmare because things are just unaffordable. And at some point, something's going to give, right? So if you want to do it the peaceful way, opt out while you still can. Otherwise, you know, unfortunately, you know, life will teach you that lesson. And I'm praying, you know, less people, you know, take that road.
Yeah, 100%. And I think more people will. But Tony, you talk a bunch about the Bitcoin space, but we don't get to learn a lot about Tony. You said that you grew up a lot with American culture in this interview here earlier today. So tell us two or three things that have really stuck out on like American culture that you think like really affected you, maybe as a kid. Maybe it was a movie, maybe it was some sporting event or something along those lines. What are you pulling from American culture that, you know, makes you almost feel a sense of American pride, it seems?
You know, I was very blessed growing up. I went to an American school and my teachers were from Michigan. And so I grew up with John Denver. And to this day, you know, whenever I'm having a really bad day, that's the music I listen to. It just, you know, takes me back to when I was 10 or 11 years old and my day just gets better. You know, like, I mean, there's a lot of things like that just mean a lot to me. You know, like, I mean, sitting around, you know, campfires, you know, chit-chatting with the guys, doing, you know, just the brotherhood spirit. I grew up with this. And the folks that I went to school with, you know, a lot of them were American. And so that's why, you know, like, you can consider me part American, you know, in my heart because of this. And I relate to a lot of American culture. I mean, it's like everywhere, you know, like, why wouldn't you? It's one of the best cultures to be a part of. But, you know, of course, there's also sides of it that are not so glamorous. And so this is what I'm hoping will change. At least I'll start witnessing that change in my lifetime. And for the first time ever, I believe we have a genuine opportunity to see that. And it took 2009, the creation of, you know, Bitcoin, to jumpstart that movement. So this is why I'm extremely bullish, man. I'm extremely bullish on America. I'm extremely bullish on the future. I'm extremely bullish on humanity, because despite the resistance and despite, you know, the silliness that you still see a lot of, there's a growing percentage that are starting to get it. And we don't need to hit 100% to win. We just need to hit 8 to 10%. And then the rest just falls apart organically, because no one's going to want to live a shitty lifestyle when the grass is visibly greener just a few steps away. So huddle on, man. It's going to be really, really nice and interesting this year. One advice I'd give everyone: stop looking at that fiat price, the Bitcoin number go up. Ignore it completely. Turn it off. Pretend it doesn't exist. It doesn't matter. All of this is a distraction. All of it is being manipulated, at least temporarily for now, while they still can. So if you don't want to get emotional about this and start doing things irrationally, turn it off. It doesn't matter. All you need to focus on is how you convert that rubbish money into Bitcoin, because that is the only money that has value. It doesn't matter what the price is. At one day in the not so distant future, you're going to pray you can see 100,000 again, because that's going to be like a galaxy away, you know, compared to where it's going. So, and it won't matter whether you buy Bitcoin today at 90K, 80K, 100K, 200K, who cares? If you know and believe that its value is in the hundreds and billions of dollars, what difference will it make what you buy it at now? That just stalls the process and gives you a nervous breakdown for no reason. Shut it off. You've got some spare money that you want to convert. Do it. Whatever the price is, it doesn't matter. Just do it. Hold it in self-custody. That is the key. No third-party involvement. Learn how to do it yourself. And you're sleeping like a baby, no matter what's happening on the outside.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm gonna help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
Yeah, I think one of the beauties of Bitcoin is that you realize that you don't need to be a hedge fund manager. All you need to do is just DCA into Bitcoin and, you know, just kind of go about your life. You can focus on whatever else you want to do, whether that's your family, building a business. It really just opens up your, you know, mental capacity instead of having to stress or, you know, in the States, they're all about the sports gambling now, worry about some crazy parlay or something like that, all to distract you from, you know, really what you could be doing. And I think that that's the beauty. One of the beauties of Bitcoin is just like really utilizing that power of that money to take your time back and give you some mental clarity. And I don't think that gets talked about enough, especially when you kind of figure it out. So, you know, I think that that is something that we're going to see here. You know, more people adopt that strategy here in 25, to say the least, because, you know, number will go up, I'm sure. You know, the less people that focus on that and the more that focus on the revolution is going to be one giant positive thing here going forward. But before I let you go, I gotta ask about Lebanese food, man. The Mediterranean area, they have like, you know, some of the greatest food I've ever had in my entire life. My family's half Greek, so I always love the Mediterranean food and that aspect of things. So tell me, what's your favorite dish, or is there something that, you know, more people need to try, because the food there is just, from what I gather, is outstanding.
The Lebanese cuisine is one of the healthiest cuisines in the world. I mean, it's absolutely delicious. If you we're high on garlic, we're high on you know, olive oil. It's extremely good. One thing about the Lebanese lifestyle that I miss is that it never sleeps. It's a 24/7 social engine. You know, when I used to live there, the days were, you know, you'd go to work, let's say at 8, your day would end maybe around noon, 2 p.m. And then, you know, people would go home, take a little nap, I guess, you know, till 4 p.m. And then they'd get together, you know, like the day actually starts at around 5 p.m. They'd get together for drinks, you know, and then they'd have more drinks till about 10, 11 p.m. And then they'd go out for dinners, and then they'd go out clubbing. And then after the clubbing, they'd go out for, you know, the bigger meal, you know, right after the club. And so you'd get like a half an hour sleep before you had to go take a shower and go back to work and repeat the cycle. But somehow the energy level is so high that it takes a long time for you to feel tired. Like I remember our 7 days a week, I would sleep like what, 5 hours a week. And I was like fully functional, you know, and that's what I miss. You don't really see that anywhere else in the world. And what are you going to do, man? It's a good, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We have a cancer in the country, which unfortunately is still around. So until that completely dies out, it's going to, you know, always ruin the day for those that are seeking better lives. I'm hoping that cancer gets, you know, annihilated everywhere worldwide. And I'm hailing Bitcoin as my hero.
Yeah, and I'm hoping for that as well, because that sounds like a great time and I want to go and visit here sometime in the near future. But Tony, you've been very generous with your time. So why don't you tell the people where they could figure out more about you and the Bitcoin way?
Sure thing, man. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. For anyone that wants to reach out, you know, the bitcoinway.com, always available. We have a free 30-minute consultation for anyone that just want to reach out and chat. Happy to talk to everyone. We're very active on X, Twitter. I mean, you can follow me and the Bitcoin Way, you know, very easily. We're all over the place on a daily basis. My handle is V4BTC, you know, Valentine4BTC, and the Bitcoin Way _. So anyone that wants to reach out, always a pleasure.
All right. And I'll put all that in the show notes and everybody should give them a follow. And Tony, thanks so much.
Brandon, pleasure to be here, man. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.